Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
A science story, huh?
Is NYU a scientist?
I felt right.
I was so
and I just thought, well,
I figured it out.
It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Story Collider, where we bring you true, personal stories about science. I'm your host, Erin Barker, and this week we're bringing you two stories from our education program. As some of you might know, because we talk about it every week on this podcast, the Story Collider has, over the years, developed an education program based on the coaching practice that we use in the development of stories for our shows. We offer guest lectures and coaching, but our storytelling workshops are the most popular. Our workshops, which we offer both online and in person, are each led by a team of Story Collider producers who come from a broad range of expertise and draw from both hard-won stage experience and insights from psychology, social science, and more to train workshoppers in the practice of storytelling as well as the scientific theory behind it. We offer these workshops to private groups, and we also offer workshops that are open to the public that you can sign up for online. In fact, I will be leading one this summer, and you can head to our website to sign up right now. Find out more about our education program at storycollider.org/education. But for now, I'm excited to share two stories from two workshop alumni, Yasmin and Julianne. Our first story today is from Yasmin Jodet. Yasmin took part in a workshop that we hosted for Ginkgo Bioworks last year and worked with our senior producers Lily B. and Misha Gajewski to develop and record her story remotely this past winter. Here's Yasmin.
So I remember sitting at a large family dinner table in Iran. I'm 14, and it's the beginning of summer, and I'm thinking about a robotic competition that I heard about this morning. A competition at the end of the summer. Come join with your robot. I wonder, beating cyborgs on Mortal Kombat is certainly fun, but building robots in real life and putting them in a contest is just another level of adventure. But the problem is, I have no idea how to build a robot. So while I'm building the concept in my head, I hear my aunt asking, Yasmin, when are you going to help out your mom and learn to cook? Well, at that moment, this is the last thing I want to hear. This is the same alarm I've been snoozing for the past 3 years. I just don't feel energized by the idea of creating redundancy to my mom's excellent cooking skills. I'll learn to cook when I get to it, or I don't know, when I need to survive. But right now, all I want to do is to explore survival in form of a robot that has to go into that battle. But at the same time, you know, I feel really embarrassed and underachieved for not knowing how to cook. My immediate defense mechanism at that moment is to smile and assure my aunt that I'll take care of this as soon as possible. So the next day, I go to school again and I ask around about this robotic competition. I read the poster again and I learn that the boys' school is actually organizing it. So I wonder how we can be a part of this, because schools are separated in Iran, but maybe the headmaster knows a way. I mean, she knows I'm very interested and proactive about starting new opportunities for the school. And she kind of trusts me. So maybe I can start negotiating with her. After all, like, she knows me and knows that I don't do this just for fun. I'd like to learn something. I'd like to build up the future. And I know many other classmates of mine, like Perry, who aspire to be an engineer and who love to build up their skills. But here's the thing. I have to negotiate with her. I have to make sure we have budget for this. This is super last minute. We just have 3 months to learn. And basically, I have to drop a new bomb. So I go to the headmaster. And of course, she already knows about this contest. And I ask if I could make a team and participate in this competition along with some of my classmates. When she hears about this, her face lights up like a spinning fortune ball. I can really feel the uncertainty and worry in her face, but at the same time, her face is delighted because there is another opportunity for the girls to participate in something that can help build their future. She says, well, this is something that we haven't planned for and we don't have budget for it. And I don't know, this type of activity needs supplies and support. We don't have any budget. I say, I know, don't worry about this. We can definitely align with our parents. They can help. We can go and shop all the supplies by ourselves. We can even put in some money from our pocket and make sure this happens. Don't worry about it. And she says, okay, let's say that is done. What about the robotics experience? None of you have built a robot before. And the school doesn't have budget for another robotics instructor. And then I take a deep breath, and this is where I'm actually dropping that bomb. So I say, well, I've heard the boys' school is experienced. There are a few high school seniors in the boys' school who are going to mentor more juniors for this competition. And I wonder if we can get the same training or be a part of that training. And there is a pause there. I'm waiting to see how the fortune ball spins again. And it's just the spinning. I don't see anything. She says, give me a couple of hours to think through this. And I leave her office with a feeling of as if gearboxes are flying in my stomach. I don't know what's her reaction going to look like. Is she gonna say no? Is she okay? I think I'll just have to wait. And a few hours later, she calls me back to her office and says, well, I talked to the organizer from the boys' school, and we can make this happen as long as you guys act really professionally and make sure all the regulations are met and report back every few weeks. And wow, I'm just left in awe. This is such a defining moment for me. I can't believe it's happening. In those few milliseconds, I'm just thinking through the next few months and how we're in the competition. I'm imagining our robot. I'm thinking about victory. I'm thinking about a bunch of things. And I say, thank you so much. This is a great opportunity. We'll make sure to do our best and you won't be disappointed. Thank you so much. and I leave her to office. I ran to the yard and I found Perry and Ozra, and I tell them about this competition. They can't imagine that they can go to this competition, and we're super stoked about this. So we go to the classes twice a week, go shopping for the parts, and learn to manage the small budget that the school has provided us to buy supplies. And the whole school has heard about this project, and they can't believe we've managed to take classes at the boys' school and that we're building a robot. 3 months later, I'm sitting on the floor of my bedroom. It's 2 a.m. and my dad and I are assembling the robot. While I'm measuring and drilling holes in the chassis, I keep reviewing the past 3 months in my head. We've gone to school every other day the whole summer. We've managed to buy all the supplies with little money that the school provided. And we've been to tens of part-selling shops in the city looking for the right motor and pump. And now, here I am, with a broken robot in my hand, less than 10 hours away from the competition. At that moment, I just want to leave everything behind on the floor and just go to bed and completely forget about the competition. And I feel really exhausted. I think to myself, have I stretched myself and my team too thin for the past 3 months? Maybe we aren't ready after all. But then I think about what I want deep inside. I am responsible. My team is the blueprint of all the possibilities that are about to open up to my classmates. And we simply can't fail. The thrill of tomorrow's competition and taking this battle to the finish line keeps me going. So I go back, I fix the joystick, I reassemble the wheels, and finally screw in the chassis and go back to sleep. So the next day, Perry, Ozra, and I go to the competition, and we find ourselves in the middle of a large courtyard surrounded by laboratories with a ton of people. I mean, it's not a ton, but it's a large crowd. And there are certainly no more girls than a few. So it's a little bit intimidating, but well, we're here, we're breaking the rules, and this is our opportunity. The whole school has heard about this, and everybody's amazed that we're going to this competition. And we have trouble finding the judges, though. We look around, and it's just so crowded. Everybody's preparing for their robots and putting together all the last-minute pieces, and we're looking for a space to assemble our robot, too. It looks like a spaceship with two shock needles in the front and a lift truck in the back. We were calling our robot Yahoo. It doesn't look anything like Yahoo, but last night I managed to paint a little Yahoo logo on it just last minute. I think it was 6 a.m. So everybody's laughing at it, and we go into the competition, and all other teams also start loading their robots in the battle ring. All I have to do is to keep the robot within the perimeters and throw the other robot out the ring for just 3 minutes. Yahoo wins the first two fights, and now it's time for the third match with the winner of the last two rounds. But the needles are breaking apart, the wheels are coming loose. And this one is tricky because the other robot is very agile, very sleek, looks really modern, and it's very sharp and pointy. And there's absolutely no way we can catch it. It's just running around so fast. So I'm just fighting the joystick and trying to control our robot, but because the other robot is super fast, it's just throwing our robot outside the ring several times. and I find myself staring at the 1 minute countdown. My heart is just pumping. I don't know what to do at that moment. I don't know how to fix this. I don't know what is broken. Can someone help me? So I look around and I can't find Perry. And I ask for a timeout to go and find Perry. And I see her looking out the window, very disappointed, very overwhelmed. And I go and say, Perry, come on, we've got this. We're this close. And Perry says, no, Yasmin, I'm sorry. I can't do this anymore. There is zero chance that we're winning this game. And, you know, that's fair. There is very little chance that we're going to win this game. The other robot is just much better than what we have. But that's not a good reason to leave the game. We should go back and finish it. And I hear, ding, the time's up. So we should go back, I tell Ozra. And we go back and we've tried to fix the robot as much as we can. And it's almost working now. So we go back to the ring and start the competition again. And after a few seconds, I see Perry joining us again. Because you know what? Our robot is beating the other robot with the lift truck like there is no tomorrow. I mean, we designed that lift truck to lift the other robots, but now we're actually hitting that robot with the lift truck. But that feels so good because I was furious earlier. I could hear everybody, all the boys in the background saying, well, look at that broken robot. There's no chance you're going to win this game. What are you even doing here? But now we're back in the game. And of course, there's no way we're going to win that battle because we just lost. but we finished the game and win third place among all the other contestants who were a few years older than us. So I know we lost that battle, but I still feel victorious for starting this with my classmates. And there is a great feeling in me. The bond that I'm feeling right now, the feeling of belonging to a robotics team, is just stronger than all the wires that we soldered last night. I feel stoked. And I feel very passionate about robotics right now. So that was the defining moment that I decided that being in the combat zone is where I want to be all the time.
That was Yasmin Joda. Yasmin is currently a senior automation engineer at Ginkgo Bioworks, where she designs robotic systems that can run biological laboratory operations at high scales. Before we continue with today's episode, just a couple of reminders. We have shows coming up in London, Atlanta, Seattle, Chicago, and LA over the course of this next month, and one in Boston tomorrow on the 20th. For more information and details, visit storycollider.org/shows. Also, if you're not already following us on social media, follow us at Story Collider. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And finally, if you're a fan of this podcast, and if you, like all of us at the Story Collider, believe in the power these stories have to reveal the humanity behind science, to change our understanding of how science happens and who it belongs to, please consider donating to the Story Collider at storycollider.org/donate. We're so grateful to everyone who helps to make our work possible.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Our second story today is from Julianne Villa. Julianne took part in our public workshop program and then developed her story with producers Lily B. and Jitesh Jaggi for one of our Chicago shows in May 2022 at the International Museum of Surgical Science. Here's Julianne.
So I had this magnet on my fridge that said running is cheaper than therapy. And I would say that most of my friends agree with that because I've spent the past 25 years running on the Chicago lakefront. What started as a hobby eventually became year-round, no matter what the weather. I actually own 2 pair of reflective winter running pants for like light and cold winter. And after all of this time, I definitely would say that my therapist and I both agree that I'm simply better when I move on a regular basis, physically and mentally. And then about 18 months ago, I started having pain in my right hip. And I figured at this point, I was kind of in like mid-40s, urban cliche, because I had decided to also throw CrossFit into the mix. And, you know, there's like gymnastics movements. And I had kind of come to the fact that, you know, I would book an MRI. And, you know, maybe this would be the point where I had to deal with an injury and perhaps kind of dial it back. And then I got this phone call, and it was after work. And on the screen of my phone, I immediately knew that it was the hospital. And the surgeon is talking to me, and he says, "You have a very large tumor in the right side of your pelvis, and it's cancer." And he describes to me a very complicated surgery involving multiple teams. It's kind of the stuff that like a good Grey's Anatomy episode, maybe a 2-part episode, is like built around. And at the end, he says, "You know, but this would be a painful surgery for both of us, and it wouldn't give you the outcome that you're looking for." The thing is that this is my 3rd cancer diagnosis in the span of 10 years, so I have oncologists on speed dial. And I sit down for a video conversation with my previous oncologist who knows me. We are both runners. And he's looked at all of my scans and all of my background information, and we're talking about different treatment options. And he says, kind of like a question, "Are you going for a cure?" Which immediately I say yes. I don't even know what we talked about after that, because a cure means surgery to remove the tumor. So I go back, I book time with the surgeon, and I go into his office. And I realize at some point that he and I have met before. I kind of knew this about 2 years prior, because I'm never maybe 3 to 6 months away from a scan. And when I introduce myself as a patient or even a person, I check off things like, you know, 52 half marathons and a cycling coach. And I used to be a spin instructor and I enjoy hiking, much like the way many women check the boxes of wife and mother. So he gets me. And I bring in with me a anatomy coloring book because I want to be very clear about what we're about to talk about. He's explaining to me this surgery that is not inoperable, but life-changing. And what we're looking at on the page is a black and white drawing. And if you haven't thought about the human anatomy and the pelvis, right, there's that kind of like stick thing in the middle, right, kind of like a stack of lifesavers with all of your, you know, cervical spine. And then at the bottom are the 2 sort of lobes or like wings of a butterfly. And I hand him a pen and I ask him to mark on the picture what he's going to do. And what he does is he takes the pen and he marks right in the middle, down about kind of in the middle and the half. And then over on the side, he's going to make these 2 cuts, and he's going to take away half of my pelvis in a hemipelvectomy, and he's not going to replace it with anything. And this is the surgery. When I come out of the ICU in June, the first thing I notice is that there's a tube down my throat, my arms are strapped down, and so are my legs. And as I'm starting to wake up and they take the tube out, I immediately ask them to put on Bravo because there's like a Top Chef marathon on. And then by the end of the day, I'm put into a regular room just in time to find out who the winner is and like what the fabulous meal was. But by day 4, when the resident comes in before sunrise, he tells me that I'm cleared for unrestricted weight bearing, which is medical jargon for they can try to make you stand at bedside using a walker on day 4. And then within a week, I'm no longer attached to any tubes. And they take me about a block away and in an ambulance. And they bring me over for inpatient therapy. My therapist and I are a great match. The very first day, he says, come on, let's see what you can do. He also asks me to see if I can lift my leg one time to get up a very bright orange set of stairs. When he really wants to motivate me, he looks me right in the eye and says, come on, heart of a champion, and gets me to do a few more reps. Within a month of this, I'm finally ready to go home. And I wheel myself out of the inpatient hospital, the therapy hospital, over back to my surgeon's office. And the team is there, and they're remarking. They say this is the best surgical outcome they've ever seen, that it's ideal. And they look at the three parts of my skin that have been sewn together, and they're amazed that I haven't needed another transfusion, that it looks like I'll never need a skin graft. And I make it into kind of my own version of show and tell, where I pick up videos on my phone and I say that, you know, I show them that I can now go up and down those orange stairs with just a little bit of help. I've used these canes for the very first time because they figured out that my upper body is strong enough to hold up my body weight as I learn to stand again. And just as I'm about to head out, I ask for clarity. And I say, so remind me again, what are my restrictions? And the surgeon looks at me and he says, well, you decide what's possible. No running of any kind, no high impact. But beyond that, you get to define what's possible for us. And so I just proceed with going home, and my family's got all like the balloons and the cards and all the things packed up after a month. But I am pissed and seething, because in the months prior to this, I seem to have found the one surgery, a medical condition that you actually cannot Google. I have a degree in health communication from the institution a couple blocks from here where I'm being treated. I work in healthcare. And it doesn't matter what hashtag I search on Twitter or where I go on Facebook or, you know, dive into YouTube. I even made it like brief foray into what's that thing called, you know, like where they do the dances, TikTok, and all of that, you know, looking to find an answer. And there isn't one. There simply aren't people living like me after surgery. No evidence. Eventually, I do learn that you can find, there's this very lively, very rich, adaptive sport community in Chicago. And I start with a little bit of indoor rock climbing. And then on a sunny day in early April, true story here in Chicago, believe it or not, I actually do my first miles outside. And immediately a few things become very clear. They get me a sport wheelchair, and I realize that I cannot get into that chair without at least two or three people helping me. That you are required to wear a helmet, of course, because the streets of Chicago are dangerous and that they have a lot of potholes and a few cobblestones. And you can actually flip over when you're using a sport wheelchair. That, you know, just kind of terrifies me a little bit as I'm learning to use it for the very first time. But that same day, there were 14 friends who ran right alongside me every step of the way. And I crossed my first finish line, even though it was an inflatable one. And what I now know for certain is that even though I'm still actively living with cancer, is that I know that the next time that somebody Googles internal hemipelvectomy, that the person that they're going to find living life is me.
That was Julianne Villa. Julianne is the health and science communicator. She honed her skills over 20 years as a public high school teacher. Her first Story Collider workshop in 2017 sparked a new unknown artistic side, and she's been hooked ever since. She's a Chicago Moth Story Slam regular and uses her storytelling skills for good in healthcare, giving voice to patient experience. Before we proceed this week, if you're a Patreon subscriber, we have one more story for you from our education program from Ruth M. Vega. If you're not a Patreon subscriber already, go to patreon.com/thestorycollider to subscribe and get access to our bonus feed, We'll give you just a snippet of Ruth's story here.
It was an afternoon in August 2020, and I was half naked in this small, cold room without windows. I was trying to cover myself with one of those extra large pieces of cloth they give you at the doctor's office. And I was waiting to get the end diagnostic mammogram in the past handful of years. This was actually one of my first in-person interactions with someone different from my husband in a tiny indoor space since the beginning of the pandemic.
To hear the rest of Ruth's beautiful story, go to patreon.com/thestorycollider and subscribe to get access to our bonus and ad-free podcast feed. The Story Collider is so grateful to Yasmin, Julianne, and Ruth for sharing their stories with us. The Story Collider is also very grateful for the support of Science Sandbox, a Simons Foundation initiative dedicated to engaging everyone with the process of science. This podcast is produced by me, Erin Barker, Executive Director and Co-Founder of The Story Collider, along with Managing Producer Misha Gajewski and Senior Podcast Editor Jun Chen. We're also grateful to Story Collider's board and the rest of our staff, including Managing Director Anne-Marie Lonsdale, Science Advisory Fellow Edith Gonzalez, and our Operations Manager Lindsay Cooper, without whom none of this would be possible. Our theme music is by Ghost. Next week, Misha Gajewski will be back with stories about initiations featuring lumberjacks and pepper spray and all kinds of stuff you won't want to miss. Until then, thanks for listening, and don't forget to check out Ruth's story at patreon.com/thestorycollider.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.